Welcome to Play Comics, the show where we're going to be looking at video games based on comic properties and how faithful they are to the source material. Today, it's the entire 2600 library on the Atari 2600, because there's really only three games when you get down to the essence of it. Normally, I'm not going to lump things together, but, you know, if you get something like the Dragon Ball Z Budokai and Budokai Tenkaichi series, where it's just a bunch of fighting games and a storyline that's really loosely thrown in there because all games have a storyline for some reason, sometimes you just gotta lump some stuff together. So, the first thing I'm going to be looking at for the Atari games, though, is the epitome of the first kind of game we're looking at, sprites being the only reason this thing is based on a comic property, and that's going to be Asterix. So I'll admit that I'm a little bit out of my element on this one. It's a French comic, and I can't read it in French because I took Spanish like a genius in high school, but I do have somebody in my house who took French and loves these comics, my wife. So, Kaylee, what does this game actually have to do with the comics?
Other than using imagery from the comics and winning to avoid the liars, there's really not that much to do with it.
So, the house expert has spoken. Asterix is a story of a tribe of Gauls. They have this druid who goes around with them and makes this potion that can basically make them original Superman, invincible style. Except for one of their guys who's a big old dude named Obelix, and he fell into the potion when he was little, and he's permanently enhanced like that. And they're usually fighting against the Romans in order to save their tribe, because Gauls and Romans, it's just kind of what they do. And that's basically the plot for this game as well. In the Asterix levels, you're on a ship running up and down and side to side with your very, very horrible Atari 2600 era graphics, collecting cauldrons and helmets and shields and lamps. And in the Obelix levels, you're getting fish and apples and wild boar legs that hopefully somebody has already cooked, and mugs of what I have to assume is beer, because in order to be historically accurate, beer would be safer than water and much tastier. And something that the manual calls a surprise object, but I can't last long enough in the game to see what it is. But essentially everything that they switch there is just a sprite swap, and it doesn't really change much how the gameplay goes anyway. It just changes the amount of points you get. And just like in the comics, you don't really want to mess with the lyres, which, for those who don't know, is a really old stringed instrument. There's a poet slash bard named Cacophonix. I'm probably going to get destroyed with how I pronounce his name, but much like my pronunciation, he is not very good. Unlike me, he thinks he's good, and I know my pronunciation is horrible. The running gag here is that during feasts and stuff, he's usually tied up off to the side so that everybody else can actually enjoy themselves. So like I said, I mean, you run along the ship, you collect the things you're supposed to collect, you don't collect the things you're not supposed to collect, which in this case is just the lyres. Not really an Asterix-y game, because that kind of game exists all over the place, but, you know, for the 2600, what do you expect? Should also be noted here that in the US, this was a Taz game, which, except for the sprite swaps, was exactly the same thing. But Asterix did have a North American release, and since the last time I checked, Canada is in North America, we're talking about it here. I'm going to leave a link to the Atari Age forum post that kind of proves that somebody has it with the nice big old North American stamp on the box, saying, hey, this game was released in North America. So, that is something that I just think is interesting, and even if it ends up being a fake, it's kind of something I don't mind touching on just because of the story behind it. Next, we're going to be looking at Popeye. It's your classic arcade game where you run around and collect things, and the levels just get harder and harder by the enemies getting faster and faster, and that's pretty much it. I mean, you run around, you get the good things, you don't get the bad things. You've got olive oil dropping down hearts and spinach and stuff for you to get. You've got Brutus and the Sea Hag running around trying to make sure that you don't collect all those things. It should also be noted here that this game did have an NES release. It's one of those original black box games, but we're going to talk about it here because there wasn't much of a change on that NES game besides making it prettier and sound better and play a little smoother. It's the same game. It's just like when they re-release a PlayStation 1 game on PS3 or PS4. It's prettier, it plays better, but it's the same thing. The final game in the sprites are the only reason this is connected to a comic category is Smurf Rescue in Gargamel's Castle. And, I mean, it's nothing special here. It's not even really a Smurf game in the sense that the only recognizable Smurf that I ever saw was Smurfette. Technically, you do play as a Smurf, but I can't tell you which one it is because it's Atari 2600 graphics. You run through, you avoid obstacles. In later levels, there's also some animal enemies. There are spots on the floor that are lava, like when we were little kids. And again, like little kids, there's no visual indication of what is lava and what is not. But most importantly to me, they put Gargamel's name right there in the title, and there's no sighting of Gargamel. You just run around, there's the animal bad guys, there's the invisible lava, and the levels repeat themselves with the enemies getting harder to deal with every time, and that's all that happens as you advance in the game. Nothing special. The other thing weird here is that due to the technical limitations of the 2600, jumping over some of these things is weird. Imagine if you had a fence going diagonally across the road. In a normal game made today, you jump over the fence, the game can tell on the y-axis whether you're going to land on the fence or whether you're going to land past the fence at that point, even though you haven't jumped across the whole thing. In the Smurfs game, you've got to jump before the first post that you get to on the road, and you've got to land past the second post. And whether you would actually land on the fence or not doesn't really matter. I'll have a small little drawing there kind of in the blog post to kind of visualize what I'm talking about. But it gets really annoying because you have to double jump over everything. And why would you even have a jump if you have to double jump over everything? Alright, so the second category of games are ones that were actually conceivably made to be for the property in question. The first one we're going to look at is Spider-Man. You know, and again, I don't want to turn this into a game review podcast. There's too many of those already. But for the 2600, there's not really much else to talk about because the games are just really simple and basic and horrible. But from a lore perspective, Spider-Man hits it pretty much on the nose. I mean, you're using your web to swing up a building instead of just climbing up, like, I don't know, a spider. And there are some bad guys that you're supposed to swing past the windows of. And whenever you catch a bad guy, you get more web fluid. I'm not sure why bad guys have web fluid for you, but I do appreciate the part where you can run out of web fluid. That's something that Spider-Man ran across pretty frequently early in his career. And I do appreciate that they aren't trying to somehow sneak in the bio-enhanced Spider-Man version where the web shooters are just part of his body instead of something that he makes in his lab. Main thing, though, about these bad guys is you can't tell who any of them are. They're just random guys out on the street. But you do have Green Goblin up at the top of the building. He does kind of arbitrarily decide that you're allowed to capture a certain number of criminals and bombs before he sets the timer on the super bomb at the top. So you got a little bit of weirdness there because that's not something the Green Goblin will normally do unless it serves his purposes. You know, if he wants to break through a building, he'll let Spider-Man beat up on somebody so he can throw him through a wall. If he wants to frame somebody, then, you know, he'd let Spider-Man make them look bad. But for the most part, Green Goblin just wants to destroy Spider-Man. So, in a story like this, I'm not sure why he wouldn't just directly go after Spider-Man instead of hanging out at the top of the building saying, "Hurdy-durdy-dur, Spider-Man, why don't you get up here so I can destroy you?" But besides that, there's not really anything particularly wrong about the game. I mean, it seems to be taken straight from a 60s, 70s era Spider-Man story. You're not going to learn a lot about the Spider-Man world there, but it's not going to really destroy anything you know either. As long as you remember that the web shooters can usually go a lot farther, and the technical limitations of the 2600 play a big part in why this one just seems a little bit weird. So, you know, I'm not saying I recommend it or anything, but if somebody pops it in, it's worth a shot. Superman is another one that was made halfway decently, from a lore perspective anyway. The game is just horrible, and it's probably worse than Superman for Nintendo 64. A real fun kind of footnote I have about this game, though, is that it's really impossible for anybody to spoil it, because the manual tells you the whole storyline, everything right there. So anybody who read the manual knows exactly how you're supposed to beat the game, how you're supposed to do everything, what happens when you beat the game. It's just not something that would happen today, and I think it's kind of funny. So in this one, Lex Luthor comes in and destroys a bridge, and you have to fix it so that everybody can get to work and you can turn in your story to the Daily Planet. It's a nice little touch here that the regular enemies can't hurt you. And really, Lex Luthor can't hurt you too much either, but he does have this kryptonite satellite kind of flying around and shooting kryptonite at you. So, you know, it's a little bit contrived there, but so are a lot of the older Superman stories. And it does kind of avoid the problem that you're going to run into with a lot of later Superman games, where every enemy can hurt you. And because that's just not something that could be happening to Superman. The main problem with this game, though, is that the flying noise is completely nauseating, and I'm surprised it didn't cause seizures. I tried to play this in front of my wife, and she made me either mute it or turn it off. And I can't really blame her. Also, the game flashes away from the screen that you're on to show you what it thinks you need to see. You know, in case you don't have the manual, it's like a little peek at the future, saying, here's a screen you need to go to, here's what you need to do to beat the game. But the way it flashed, it was just so weird. It looked to me like the game was glitching out. But it is a game made for the Superman property, so I do have to give it a little bit of credit there. Finally, probably the best game that was made directly for the property is Snoopy and the Red Baron. And I cannot believe I'm completely seriously saying that. You're Snoopy flying around in your doghouse, dogfighting with the Red Baron. The Red Baron, for some reason, has treats in his plane. He drops them and you try to collect the treats. It takes 8 hits to fully take him out. It also takes 8 hits for him to fully take you out. I think that's a nice little touch of fairness. He does have some bombs and other things to drop that you don't want to collect. But for the most part, shoot the Red Baron, don't get shot, and you're good to go. Finally, the third category of games on the 2600 is pretty much the epitome of why I'm not covering computer games. Smurfs Save the Day. I had to do something on this one, and I'm sorry, but I just had to read reviews online and base everything on that instead of actually looking at the game myself, because there's not really a good way to play it these days. You had to have some special controllers, you had to have some special audio tapes to play it, and even if I could pop it into an emulator, there's no way that it would get past the title screen because I don't have either one of those things to mess with. And really, it just barely qualifies as a game. You're learning about music, so you can basically go Mario Paint with the music levels and go make music that way, copy stuff, make your own things. You learn about color mixing, and you learn about shape sorting, and really all kinds of stuff where there's just no reason to touch the game at all, unless you just want to see it sitting on your shelf. I mean, in short, the 2600 comic book library is pretty sad. But when you've got the art of basically taking grape shot made out of paintballs and shooting it at a wall out of a cannon, you've got the memory of Dory, and you're asking some kid to make a soundtrack with a stick and a cinder block, there's not really much I think you can expect. So with that, you've been listening to Play Comics. The show, along with all show notes and anything else I think you'll find interesting, can be found at playcomics.com. You can email me at playcomicspodcast@gmail.com. The show also has a Twitter account at playcomicscast, all one word spelled normally, just squished together. Also, you can join the Facebook group. Just look for Play Comics Podcast. Play Comics is an independent production and doesn't claim copyright over anything discussed here. The show is recorded, produced, and edited in beautiful Charleston, South Carolina by me. Next time, we'll be starting up the NES library. Finally, something worth writing home about.